Chapter 5.
"It's a what?" Jackman said.
"Well, from the kind of bullet and the distance between the sniper and the target, I reckon we're looking at something like an L-11 5A3 sniper rifle, which is used by the British Army, Royal Air Force and the Royal Marines," D.R. Jackman.
Spike sounded very sure of himself. This raised a whole lot of further questions, but at least it wasn't one of the guns stolen from Kenneth Harcourt.
"A military weapon," murmured Jackman.
"Absolutely, sir. A long-range bolt-action rifle used by British Special Forces," Spike confirmed. "The longest recorded kill shot was made using one of those when a British Army sniper took out two Taliban machine gunners from a distance of over 2,700 yards.
That's 1.5 miles.
Impressive, isn't it?"
"How on earth would someone get hold of one of those?" Jackman said.
"Oh, they're not just military. You can purchase them for hunting, and some civilian long-distance competition target shooters like to use them. And it's British," Spike added proudly. "A Portsmouth-based company produce them. The firm was started by an Olympic gold medalist in shooting."
"Okay. So what would one of those set me back?" asked Jackman.
Spike didn't take a breath.
£23,000.
Jackman whistled.
"Whew, that much?"
"These are the bee's knees, sir. If I was into shooting, I'd be very happy to own one of those."
Jackman's brain was going into overdrive. For some reason, he had been certain that the stolen target rifle was going to be the culprit. Now he knew otherwise, he was still concerned that Harcourt was connected to the killing. He owned a gun club, ergo he had access to all sorts of weapons, so why not a sniper rifle?
"Spike, do you have any idea of where the shooter was standing when he fired the shot?"
"Certainly have, D.R. Jackman. I notified Uniform immediately. They're checking it out right now. From the angle of the entry wound, the trajectory was pretty clear. It was from the roof of the department store just beyond that derelict warehouse. It has a customer car park up there, connected to the multi-story council one next door."
Jackman knew the place. The top floor of the car park was only used on busy market days when traffic was heavy. It was some distance away, but made the perfect spot for a marksman, having an unobstructed view of the theatre car park.
"I guess a sharpshooter would have no trouble at all,
especially with the telescopic lenses they have on them," Spike added.
"Would have been child's play for a crack shot."
"Thanks, Spike. I really appreciate your expertise on this."
"Tell that to the prof when you've got a minute, will you, sir?" Spike laughed. "Anything else we come up with, we'll contact you."
Jackman hung up and beckoned to Marie. While he waited for her to join him, he closed his eyes and tried to think. Marie hurried in and shut the door behind her.
"Can we sum up where we are, sir? I need to get my head around all this."
"One dead male, name of Christopher Keyes, executed by a sniper using a military weapon from some distance away. On the roof of Burridge's department store, to be exact. Keyes was suspected of driving the car that killed Kirsty Harcourt. Her father, Kenneth, owns guns and runs a gun club. Plus, he's known to be angry and resentful that no one was made to pay for his daughter's death."
Marie grunted. "Looks like we're going to have that difficult conversation after all."
"Oh, well. I suggest we grab a coffee, see what Uniform have found up on the car park roof, then go and visit Harcourt again. At very least, he has to be notified about Keyes' death," Jackman said.
"What about Chris Keyes' family, sir? Have they been notified yet?" Marie asked.
"Robbie and Rosie have already gone to speak to them. We need his next of kin to formally identify him, and then we can proceed." He checked the time.
"They've been gone for a while, so we should hear from them soon."
Marie left to get their drinks, and Jackman realized that over 2 hours had passed without his having a single thought of Alistair Ashcroft. All their plans of getting out there and making inquiries about him were suddenly on hold. Naturally, the shooting came first, but Jackman was very aware that Ashcroft would really enjoy making a move while they were trying to deal with a murder. Robbie phoned.
"It's him, boss. It's Christopher Keyes. His father came to the morgue with us and made the ID."
"How are the family holding up?" Jackman asked.
"We've left them with a family liaison officer, sir.
We had no one immediately available, so Greenborough have sent us Sergeant Lucy Wells, and she's looking after them. They are all in shock, as you can imagine. The mother is devastated.
Robbie sounded pretty strung out himself. Notifying relatives was one of the more harrowing aspects of police work. Get yourselves back here, Robbie.
Yes, sir. Oh, before I go, we asked if they knew why Christopher was in that particular car park. His father said he always parked there on a Thursday. He had a part-time job at the theatre. His killer obviously knew that.
Okay. Good work, Robbie. Now you and Rosie come back. Get yourself some strong coffee and take a break.
We have a positive ID?
Marie placed a steaming mug of coffee on his desk. Confirmed. It is Keys. His phone rang again, and he heard the deep voice of the desk sergeant. No evidence found upon the car park roof, sir, but the cameras have been tampered with. One was turned aside and another was covered in some kind of sticky-back plastic. We've spoken to the security staff at Burridge's and they say no one drove onto the roof at the time of the incident. The area you mentioned, the one where the cameras were tampered with, does it give a view of the theatre, sergeant? Oh, yes, sir. Clear view. And he most likely parked on one of the lower levels with all the other cars and walked up. That's what we thought, sir, so we're going over the CCTV for the whole car park from the time it opened to the approximate time of the attack. Thanks, Sergeant. Keep me posted. Will do. Jackman stared into his coffee. Marie, do you honestly believe that Kenneth Harcourt is the kind of person who would have a young man executed in cold blood? Marie drew in a long breath.
Well, sir, we don't know the family, do we? If he was the kind of father who idolized his only daughter, maybe it's possible. But my problem with that scenario is that there were two suspects. If Keyes was indisputably the driver, and we simply hadn't got enough concrete evidence to put him away, I'd understand it. But that wasn't the case. She sipped her coffee. Or maybe if Keyes had been heard bragging about getting away with it in the pub or somewhere, that would also cause Harcourt to want to kill him. But Keyes always denied being the driver, she shrugged. We need to know more about the Harcourt family and their relationships with each other. But on the surface, I say no, I don't think he is.
I'm of the same opinion, Jackman said. The act was premeditated. Whoever killed Keyes was cold and callous, and Harcourt doesn't come across like that. Even so, I'd be interested to know where he was at the time of the shooting. We mustn't forget the man is an expert shot.
Plus he's ex-army, which means that he mixes with like-minded people, said Murray. He didn't have to pull the trigger himself, did he? He's a well-off bloke. He could have hired an assassin to do his dirty work for him. Jackman knew it would not be the first time that a grieving parent or loved one had taken the law into their own hands.
Maybe.
I'm still uneasy about three crimes all happening one after the other and all being connected to Harcourt in some way. Marie screwed her face up in concentration. The gun club break-in. Then Harcourt has his own house broken into and guns stolen. Now a man connected to the death of Kirsty, his daughter, is shot and killed. She shook her head. There has to be something linking all three.
Jackman took a long swallow of his coffee. I think we are going to have to take a close look into the life of Christopher Keyes. I want a clear picture of that young man. What he was like, whether he was trouble or a little saint, everything about him. He was the target, no question. If it has nothing to do with Kirsty Harcourt, then what on earth did he do to get himself murdered?
Good question. Marie drained her mug.
Okay, ready when you are, boss. Wits End.
The name sounds about right this time, doesn't it?
Charlie Button couldn't wait for the day to end so he could get home and spend an hour in the bath. He still smelt of diesel. The odd thing was, even though there had been a serious crime committed that day, his mind kept wandering back to the balls-up of a job at Dewsbury End Farm. If he still stank of diesel, and he'd only been in contact with the hose they had used to siphon off the fuel, what the hell did they smell like? They must have been covered in the stuff. He wished he had a list of offenders known to commit that kind of crime. A quick visit and a cursory sniff could be quite illuminating. The problem was, all the villains specializing in fuel theft
were either banged up or far too good at it to have made such a mess of a job. There were a couple of lads from one of the Fen villages who he suspected might be heading for a life of crime, but it couldn't be them. They were too young to drive, and they would hardly be carrying oil cans on the handlebars of their bikes. As soon as Jackman got back, there would be far more important things to deal with, but all Charlie could think about was the damage done to the environment. If he could only find a few names to call on, he'd even collar the scroats in his own time. The stink of diesel would hang around the perpetrators for days, a dead giveaway. He wasn't being a lone avenger or looking for kudos. He just kept thinking that if the farmer and his lads hadn't acted so quickly, the foul stuff would have contaminated the dikes and ditches and caused untold damage to the wildlife there. Plus, it would have been the devil's own job to clean it up. The stupid little shits needed to be told, and he'd happily be the one to do it. If only he could work out who they were. Then it dawned on him. PC Kevin Stoner. If anyone would know the likely suspects, it was him. Kev knew everyone. He was still at the crime scene in town, but he would be back before Charlie's shift ended. He'd have a quiet word. Charlie Button returned to his reports, doing his best to ignore his mate's comments about the smell. On the way to Wits End, Jackman and Marie formulated a strategy for interviewing Kenneth Harcourt. It wasn't exactly good cop, bad cop, but Jackman was going to take a harsher approach, while Marie would be rather more conciliatory. Yet, as they stood under the elegant portico waiting for someone to answer the door, Marie found her resolve faltering. This was not going to be easy. He was a possible suspect in a murder investigation, but at the same time he was a grieving dad whose only daughter had died needlessly, with no one made to pay for it. Kenneth Harcourt answered the door himself. His expression told them he already knew the reason for their visit. He looked grey and drained.
"It's all over the local news. A man was shot in Salton car park, and my gun was probably the weapon used. Is that what you're thinking? Because I certainly am."
He held the door open for them. They sat in the same seats, in the same room as before, but this was going to be a very different kind of interview.
"I'm afraid it's a little more complex than that, Mr. Harcourt," Jackman began. "The media do not have all the facts. We are here to make you aware of some of them before they become public."
If anything, Harcourt turned even paler. Marie tried hard to look at him dispassionately. After all, he could be this pasty colour because he had killed someone or been instrumental in that death. Her empathy was threatening to cloud her judgment. Luckily, Jackman seemed very much in control. Marie took a deep breath and listened.
"Sir, the young man who was murdered was called Christopher Keyes."
He stopped to allow the name to register, watching Harcourt closely.
"Keyes? Are you sure?"
Harcourt's face was a picture of disbelief and confusion.
"No doubt at all, sir. He's been formally identified by his father."
"My God!"
Marie saw his Adam's apple move jerkily up and down as he swallowed.
"Was it my gun? Oh, dear Lord, was it my target rifle?"
"No, sir," Jackman said flatly. "We can't say for certain yet, but it appears that it was something with the caliber of an L-11-5A3 sniper rifle."
Marie had difficulty trying to disentangle the confusion of mixed emotions that passed across Harcourt's face on hearing this.
"An assault rifle, but..."
"I'm asking you this, sir, because of your expertise with weaponry. Do you know of anyone who might own such a gun? I understand there are competitions for long-distance target shooting. Someone who belongs to your club, maybe."
"Impossible. We don't hold that kind of weapon. Weapons like that are either for the use of the military or elite target competitors who are aiming for medals, not the kind of amateurs that belong to our club. Apart from which, an L-11-5A3 would cost a small fortune."
He paused, stared at Jackman.
"Oh, Lord, I'm a suspect, aren't I?
Because I can shoot and because I always believed Keyes was the driver who killed my Kirsty."
Without answering his question, Marie asked, "Did you have any specific reason to believe that Keyes was the driver, sir?"
She kept her voice soft and as non-judgmental as she could.
"Nothing we could prove," he sighed. "But a friend of Kirsty's told us they had seen Keyes driving that particular car earlier, when they were on their way to football practice."
"We are very sorry for your loss, sir, but you can understand why we have to ask you these questions, don't you?"
She managed to keep her voice calm. "I'm not a fool, detective," Harcourt said. "And if you want to know where I was when this murder took place, ask away." Marie raised an eyebrow.
"So, where were you this afternoon at 14:30 hours?
"Right here, waiting in for the mower company to come and collect my ride-on mower. They picked it up at 2:45 exactly. The driver and my wife will verify that."
Jackman made a note of the name of the mower repair company.
"So that gun is completely unknown to you?" asked Jackman.
"Damn it, man, I've told you that already."
His face coloured briefly.
Marie found this interesting but wasn't sure why. He'd been too quick in his denial.
"I'm sorry we have to ask these questions, Mr. Harcourt. Can we rely on your assistance regarding this matter? This is a murder inquiry and we're going to need to interview members of your club. We'll be as discreet as possible, but anyone with a knowledge of guns or their use will have to be spoken to."
"Yes, yes," Harcourt said. "I'll cooperate as much as I can, but please do be discreet. It's taken years to build up that club. Decent people don't like the thought of being suspected of something so dreadful as murder."
"Decent, innocent people have nothing to fear," Jackman added.
Harcourt said nothing. "Can I ask you about Kirsty, sir?"
"Here we go," Marie said to herself.
"If it's not too painful."
Harcourt's expression softened.
"She was a handful, all right, no denying it, full of life and headstrong, but she was a great kid."
He swallowed.
"I know every parent thinks the same of their kids, but Kirsty would have gone places, I know it. She was destined to have a full, exciting life, and it was cut short. I don't think I'll ever get my head around it. The fact that it only takes a split second for a life to change, to be extinguished."
"And it changed for the whole family, didn't it?"
Marie considered how the sudden death of her own husband had changed everything for many people, not just her. "Her brother's character altered almost overnight, dear Sevens. I hadn't fully appreciated the bond between them, but when she died, it was as if someone had thrown a switch and Jack's lights dimmed. He was several years older than Kirsty, but they were very close."
"You had just the two children, sir?"
Jackman asked.
"No, the eldest Aaron is away on a gap year somewhere in the Middle Kingdom, so he says." His eyes had a distant look. "He doesn't contact us much. It pains his mother, but," he shrugged, "I can't force him to talk to us. We hope the travel will sort his head out, then maybe we'll get him back."
Jackman coughed.
Going back to Keyes, sir.
Had you known him before the accident?
Only you mentioned that Kirsty's friend recognized him."
"It was no accident, dear Jackman. It was manslaughter at the very least. But no, we didn't actually know him, other than by sight. It was Kirsty's friend who knew him. He lived a few doors away from her."
"I see."
Jackman closed his notebook and stood up.
"I think that's all for now, sir. Here's my card. If you hear the slightest whisper about that gun, please phone me immediately."
Harcourt took the card and stared at it.
"You aren't related to Lawrence Jackman, are you?"
"My father, Mr. Harcourt."
"Well, give him my best, won't you? We'll go back a long way."
Jackman gave him a tight smile.
"I'll be sure to do that, sir."
As soon as the door closed behind them, Jackman sighed loudly.
"Is there anyone my father doesn't know?"
Marie laughed. "That's what comes of being a tough boss. You know all the best people."
"And murder suspects."
"Seriously, sir, you really think Harcourt might have done it?"
"There's something about him that is ringing alarm bells, Marie. At the very least, there's something he's not telling us. Or else he knows a hell of a lot more than he's letting on."
"Body language?"
Jackman frowned.
"Not exactly. I need to think about it."
"And I had that odd thing about his gun collection yesterday.
If we both feel there's something not quite right about him, we should dig deeper.
Jackman was silent on the drive back to town. Marie guessed his thoughts were on Harcourt. Marie, on the other hand, had turned her mind to Alistair Ashcroft.
Forever in my thoughts. What an odd choice of words.
Well, he was certainly in hers. More than anything, she wanted to hear her voice reading him his rights. The photograph of Jackman and herself outside the Nick troubled her. All that time he had been spying on them, and they had never known. It made her shiver.
Superintendent Ruth Crook had taken Ashcroft's threat extremely seriously. She certainly didn't need reminding of the hell his last reign of terror had put them through. Security at the police station had been beefed up, the CCTV cameras checked several times a day, and the dog handler with Stan, his furry Exocet, patrolled the perimeters. People going in and out of the busy station were being vetted carefully, and just driving back through the security gates, Marie sensed the heightened tension in the air. Strangely, Jackman seemed oblivious to it. He was spending a lot of time in his head today and not sharing his thoughts with Marie. This was unlike him and had unsettled her. Once or twice she had caught him staring at her with a peculiar, rather haunted look on his face. After everything they had been through together, she and Jackman were close, sharing an unspoken affinity and a bond that went beyond mere camaraderie. This meant that each was very sensitive to the other's moods and states of mind.
"Everything okay, boss?" Marie asked tentatively.
Jackman, closing the car door, stared at her.
"Sorry, I was miles away then."
"I'll see. So is it Harcourt or Ashcroft?"
He gave her a sheepish smile.
"Both, actually."
"Then let's get inside and Auntie Marie will make you a nice coffee. The nearest the Fenland Constabulary can get to one anyway."
"I'll take you up on that, Auntie. Extra sugar today, please."
But Jackman's attempt at a smile was unconvincing. Marie guessed it was the thought of Ashcroft's return. Jackman was frightened for her and the team and probably their families. It was understandable, but worrying too. If they were to catch Ashcroft, they had to have a strong and inspiring leader. Jackman was the perfect man for the job, but these fears of his would undermine him. If it came to a struggle between a man who cared too much versus a man who cared about nothing, the former would lose.